We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning.
Guy Dufault, we've seen how the Rhode Island Democratic Party has suffered from a bit of a vacuum in its messaging capacity in recent years. There have been times when House Speaker Nicholas Mattiello has been serving as the party's de facto spokesman rather than Democratic Party Chairman Joe McNamara. You are a former chairman of the state Democratic Party. How big a problem is this for Democrats as they head into the 2018 election season?
I think it's a problem at the national level as well as the local level. I think part of it stems from the strength of Bernie Sanders in the last election and getting a more progressive voice moving forward. I think we're going to see some of that in Rhode Island as we see a resurgence, if you will, in the progressive message. I think you'll hear a lot of that from Aaron Regenberg, who will be running for lieutenant governor. So it's extraordinarily difficult to balance. Having been a state chairman when we had a Democratic governor, the last time that actually really happened, I don't count Lee Chafee as a Democrat, was when Bruce Sondland was in and Joe DeAngelis was the Speaker of the House. And it took a while, even back then, it took a while to, you know, for everybody to find their level, if you will. And so it's always difficult when you have the titular head of the party, usually controlled by the House of Representatives, by the makeup of it. And then a governor comes along, and the governor then becomes the leading elected Democrat. It can create problems, and it's usually water finds its own level. And I think what you'll find here is there'll be a sharing of those responsibilities from a messaging viewpoint ultimately.
Let's go to Scott.
Well, you've known McNamara for years, and one thing, he's just AWOL. He's just missing in action a lot. You see Brandon Bell out there all the time, press releases, media appearances, taking shots at the Democrats, and yet McNamara, he's like he's invisible.
Well, he's done a different approach. Joe McNamara's approach to running the operation is to go to the technical side. And that's something for a long time that the Democratic Party has always struggled with. And Joe's strength, if you will, is to be able to get those voting lists up to date, be able to get information out to the people that are running. He's very good at recruiting people to run for offices when there's vacancies. So it's not always just that out front. I mean, I was kind of an out front guy when I was there.
Sometimes too out front is right.
So, I mean, there's sometimes a danger to being that out front guy. And also remember this, he's in a defensive position. You know, I had a Republican governor when I first started in Governor DePreet, and then we got, Governor Sondland elected. So it was pretty easy to throw some bombs when you had some Republicans out there. There are no Republicans to throw bombs at right now. So the idea that Joe has taken the time to really make the party technologically sound is a smart one.
To look at things from a broader perspective, despite some recent Democratic victories, we've seen how Democrats have really struggled since President Obama left office, struggled on a national level. You're a native of Pawtucket, in touch with working class voters. What do you think Democrats need to do differently to appeal to those working class voters?
The one thing that Hillary Clinton missed, and that is that there was a constituency of hardworking middle class people that they needed to address the issue of inequality. And I think the progressive branch, Bernie Sanders, really jumped on that. And I think one of the reasons why he moved so rapidly to the top of the food chain was because he captured that inequality. And I think Clinton glossed over it and didn't go into the hotbeds. She should have been spending time in Michigan. She should have been spending time in Pennsylvania, Ohio, places where that middle class inequality was really jumping off the page at people. Bernie picked up on that, and I think that's why he had such a great insurgency.
You know, reading some of the national commentary, Mark Lilla has a new book out, and a lot of it kind of points at the penumbra of what you're talking about, which is there too much identity politics on the Democratic side? In other words, are we spending too much time talking about transgender rights, LGBT rights, which everybody's for, I think, in the party, but not enough time messaging, reaching out to voters in, you know, I wish Hillary had done a trip through Wisconsin union halls, for instance, which she didn't do.
It's a giant tent. I mean, one thing I always admire the Republicans about is they're pretty disciplined when it comes to their messaging. You know, we're going to cut taxes and we're going to, you know, make sure the economy grows through, you know, dynamic scoring. I mean, they really know how to stay on message and do a really good job with that. We, on the other hand, Our tent is so big, it really is difficult to get all those messages in. And sometimes what gets lost is the basic fundamental message, which is fairness to the American middle class.
We're talking here with longtime Rhode Island Democrat Guy Dufault. And Guy, we know Republicans think Governor Raimondo might be vulnerable in 2018 because her public approval ratings in public polls have remained below 50%. What's your explanation for that, given how the economy has improved somewhat during her time in office?
I have a somewhat unique thought process on that. I think that she's bit off way more than any governor could chew. She has taken on some of the most difficult problems that our state has had over the years, tackling our roads and bridges, which were in many cases considered the worst in the country. The DMV, the insolvable problem, even jumping in with UHIP, which she inherited from Lincoln Chafee. And I think she's done as good a job as you can trying to bail out of that situation. But the premise of UHIP, which was to get our social spending under control and have some controls over it, was a noble gesture on her part. I think the fact that she has stayed in the low 40s is really indicative of the fact that she's really tried to do, in my humble estimation, too much too soon. She's almost too competent. She's tackling all of these problems simultaneously. And people, I had people complaining the other day about, oh my God, I had a traffic jam 3 days in a row. Well, you know what? When you fix all the roads at the same time, which needed to be fixed, that happens.
As a fellow Democrat, what advice would you give to her for trying to improve her standing?
I would probably streamline what she's attempting to accomplish, and I would tell her to focus on two or three main items and get them done, such as the roadworks project, which I think is a great project, and she's getting all of our roads fixed. But I would put a real emphasis on narrowing the focus and just accomplishing two or three major things that are in front of her instead of taking on the dozen that she is.
Do you think she was wise to veto the evergreen teachers contract bill? I just don't get the politics.
I'm a big believer in politics by addition, not subtraction. And I think in this case, nobody really cared. The people that did care were the union members who go out and they work hard, etc. It's basically fair when you think about it. Two sides put the original deal together. There was people on both sides. The idea that you're going to unilaterally undo something after the fact, I think, was inherently unfair to people. And so I would have passed the evergreen. It was the practice, common practice, for years and years.
Finally, Guy, we can't let you go without asking you about East Greenwich, where you've lived for a number of years, quite a stormy, affluent community to judge from the news reports. What's your explanation as a resident on what's going on there?
Well, they made a classic mistake. The council got taken over by some right-wing Republicans. The end result was, as they felt taxation was too high, so they actually tried to cut taxes. But what they need to understand in a community like East Greenwich, the schools are sacred. And people go to East Greenwich to be in those schools. And the idea that somehow you're going to cut taxes and at the same time be able to pay for that by cutting school activities and what happens in the East Greenwich schools, it's a short-sighted approach. You're saving $50 or $80 on a property tax bill, and the value of your house goes down $30,000 because your schools are failing. It makes no sense. The strength of that community, I've lived there 20 years, the strength of that community is great schools, which people love. My prediction is all four of those members will be gone.
All right, we're out of time. We need to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
And longtime Democrat and Paw Sox consultant, Guy Dufault.
Thanks, Ian. Appreciate it greatly.